Are two masks better than one? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we'll talk to a local doctor to see what he thinks about Dr. Fauci's new recommendation to mask up twice. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, a conversation with the new CEO at the Kummer Museum and some positive news and notes for your midweek. First this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. 9,594 new positive tests for COVID-19 in Florida yesterday. The death toll now stands at 25,673. But here's a better number. As of Monday, nearly 1.5 million people have been vaccinated in Florida. Of those, about 1.2 million have just received their first dose of a vaccine, and about 175,000 Florida residents have completed their entire vaccine series. Now, that's some good news. Let's get those numbers going in the right direction. And this week, the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said he believes wearing two masks to protect yourself and others from the virus is better than one. Fauci says this is just common sense as a way to slow the spread of coronavirus. Now, this news comes as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is engaging in a tense back and forth with the new Biden White House over how well his administration is vaccinating seniors here and Florida's overall pandemic response. Dr. Jeff Goldhagen is chief of the Division of Community and Societal Pediatrics at UF Health Jacksonville. He's on the line now as we talk about all of this. Dr. Goldhagen, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Appreciate it very much.
And we should note you are also the former director of the Duval County Health Department. And as we talk about masking up, we want your calls, everybody. Now, let's keep in mind Mayor Lenny Curry extended the mask mandate in Duval County for another month, but the surrounding counties do not have a mandate. So call us up now. Let us know. Are you continuing to mask up? What do you think about the idea of putting on two masks to protect yourself? Are you tired of wearing masks, or are you even more tired of seeing people defying the mask mandate and not wearing masks? Give us a call as we talk about this, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. Okay, so Dr. Goldhagen, people were seen wearing two masks at President Joe Biden's inauguration. Poet Amanda Gorman and Pete Buttigieg, Biden's nominee to run the Transportation Department, they both had on surgical masks underneath a cloth mask. And White House advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci says two masks likely do provide more protection than just one. What are your thoughts?
Well, first, I think we need to come to a common understanding that wearing one mask is important. I'm looking actually at a paper here that identifies seven different studies that look at the impact of wearing a mask. And one in a hair salon in Missouri, there were two hairstylists that that had COVID. None of the 139 clients developed symptoms who were wearing masks. 67 tested negative and so on. So we know very much that masks work, and we know the science and engineering behind the mask. And in fact, two masks do work better than one. Now, this is all about doing two things. Number one, stopping the spread to others. And number two, preventing the intake of virus directly from others. So yes, two masks do work better than one. I personally always wear two masks.
You've been doing that from the beginning?
From the beginning, yes.
Wow. Okay. Let's note that President Biden also signed executive orders when he took office that mandate wearing masks on federal property, along with airplanes, trains, buses, and at airports. A December survey from the Kaiser Family Foundation found that more than 70% of Americans are wearing masks. Now, that said, Dr. Fauci also pointed out, and Dr. Goldhagen, I know you are vocal about this, even as more people become vaccinated, we can't just stop masking up right away, correct?
Well, that is correct. The data isn't complete yet, but being vaccinated does not necessarily mean that, in fact, we cannot carry the virus and spread it to others. So that data will only come after after we have large numbers of people who are vaccinated. Even if 5%, 10% or so people become carriers, that can, in fact, result in the spread to others who are not vaccinated. This is critically important also as it relates to opening our schools and opening our gyms and keeping our gyms and whatnot open. So that, in fact, it's critically important that people who are vaccinated continue to wear masks as rigorously as they did pre-vaccination.
Florida, the whole state, by the way, is still categorized as a red zone for COVID cases. There's a high rate of transmission. Dr. Goldhagen, what's your reaction to what we learned yesterday from the White House Coronavirus Task Force report? They are recommending that Florida close bars, restaurants, gyms, and any other indoor spaces where people are not masked up 100% of the time. That report came out on January 17th. It's unlikely the state will follow that advice, of course.
Well, we've known this from the beginning of the pandemic, that in fact, if you limit the spread, you stop the spread of the disease. If you limit the spread of the virus, you stop people from dying. And even in those communities where there are mask mandates, like Duval County, there are still substantial numbers of people who aren't wearing masks. In places like St. John's County, where there is no mask mandate, there are situations where, in fact, there are the great majority of people who are not wearing masks. Restaurants are open. They're packed. People are standing at bars shoulder to shoulder. There's no decrease in the number of diners, and nobody's wearing masks. So that if in fact, we don't have 100% mask wearing, and if we don't have limited numbers of people in gyms and in restaurants and so on and so forth, and if we have indoor dining as opposed to requiring only outdoor dining, then in fact, the only way to stop the spread of this disease and to stop the carnage of deaths that we're seeing currently is to close close the facilities down. And we know from models, previous models, that they don't have to be closed down for long periods of time. If we can adhere to the mask and social distancing requirements, we can, in fact, stop the spread of the disease until we get a significant number of our citizens vaccinated. And then slowly but surely, we can perhaps lessen some of those requirements.
Let's go to your calls now as we talk about wearing two masks rather than one, and other coronavirus information we're getting from Dr. Jeff Goldhagen. 549-2937. Helen in St. John's County. Hi, Helen. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I absolutely agree with the gentleman. Here in St. John's County, there is a flagrant disregard for mask wearing. In our house, we all contracted COVID-19, and I have a daughter who's autoimmune. The businesses and the whole county has catered to the tourism here in St. Augustine, and they're disregarding it, you know, for the economic sake. And this is the same platform of DeSantis, and it's hurting the state of Florida, but it's hurting St. John's County. And the numbers continue to rise. The superintendent is continuously saying in his emails to parents that the quarantining, my daughter's been quarantined 3 times already. She has missed. Her grades have suffered from the school she has missed, and people walk around challenging business owners. Our family hasn't eaten in a restaurant in a year, and we don't mind. We do takeout because we know that they're not wearing masks in the restaurant, and it's a health hazard, and people are walking around with COVID and spreading it to others because they refuse to wear masks, they refuse to get tested. We have had numbers, scores of tests in our family, and then antibody testing to make sure that we are minimizing and reducing the risk of spreading it to others as well as possibly reinfecting ourselves.
Yeah.
The masks are wonderful, and I have made hundreds for friends, for teachers, for all of our family members. The masks are great because you can really work with the fabric that's as dense a weave as possible to protect the nose and the mouth area. And so I don't want to wear two masks, but I think one that's well-made, which is what I do at home, really
okay.
helps.
Sure,
there is a flagrant disregard here in this county.
Helen, I cannot tell you how many people in St. John's County have said the same thing to us here at the station. And I'm so sorry that you're going through that. Thank you, Helen. Dr. Goldhagen, different counties are approaching this in very different ways because there isn't a statewide policy. If you're in Duval County, you have the benefit of a mask mandate. Once you leave the Duval County line, though, it's a completely different situation, and it's simply not as safe. What about that?
Well, what we're seeing is a complete disregard for public health, the lack of leadership related to public health. And what I think is critically important is this movement or this push to open schools. We know that, in fact, schools can be open, probably safely, if, in fact, there are precautions taken, mask wearing, social distancing, and so on and so forth. But schools don't exist in a vacuum. They exist within communities. If, in fact, the community outside the school is not taking this seriously and is not using masks and so on, then the schools are at significant risk for reopening. So schools exist within the context of communities. If the communities aren't working to prevent the spread, then schools cannot safely open. The other perspective, which I think is so interesting, is that those people who are out there maskless and not social distancing are at risk of passing the virus onto their children. We focus on the past of children spreading the disease to adults. But in fact, the adults are spreading the disease to their children. And what we know is that children do get the disease. They do get sick. They do get very sick. They can be hospitalized. They can die. And so the folks that are out there, the adults that are out there flagrantly violating the use of masks are putting their own children at risk. And also, obviously, adults and in particular, older adults and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So this is a risk issue for children as well.
We have calls about that. Catherine calling from the Rail Yard District. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm a teacher who's on leave from Duval County because of my risk factors, and we work with special needs students. Isn't the probability of contracting the virus got to do with the buildup in the air? Wouldn't we be encouraged to wear N95 masks to be more effectively protected?
Thanks for that. A few others waiting on hold to talk about N95 masks. Dr. Goldhagen, your thoughts?
Well, certainly N95 masks are the most successful at preventing the spread of the disease. The difficulty is that, in fact, they do so and they decrease the ability to breathe. And so it's really not necessarily feasible for teachers, as an example, to be wearing an N95 mask constantly. There are better masks than others, and people can go online and look at the evaluation of different types of masks. There's something called a KN95 mask, which is the N95 mask that's used in China. That's a little better than surgical masks.
Are they more easily available?
Sure, you can. Well, there's two issues. Yes, you can get them in stores in Jacksonville and so on. And yes, you can get them online, but you have to be careful that in fact they are in fact real KN95 masks and not bootleg type of masks.
Okay.
But two masks work. If you're using cloth masks, they need, as the previous caller mentioned, they need to have two layers. Some of them have two layers, and you can put a coffee filter in between. So a mask is not a mask is not a mask. The people that you see wearing bandanas over their faces, those are generally not overly efficacious. And those folks that are using masks that have respirator-type devices on them, they are not overly efficacious as well. So I would encourage people to go online and actually take a look at which masks are the most efficacious.
Lots of emails and tweets and calls for Dr. Jeff Goldhagen. Many folks want to just ask this question. Is it better to just wear an N95 mask, Dr. Goldhagen, than to double mask?
I don't know that data is well established. The important thing first is to wear the mask. The second is to make sure the mask is worn correctly over the nose. I find that, in fact, when I double mask with a cloth mask and a surgical mask, I can breathe better than with a KN95 mask. The feasibility of using N95 masks generally, it's just not feasible. And in fact, if the N95 mask is going to be successful, you actually have to have a formal fitting of that mask to ensure that, in fact, you get almost no air exchange at all.
549-2937. Ruby in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Ruby.
Hi, yes. I agree with the doctor about wearing two masks. I am American Red Cross emergency operations trained for disaster relief, and we were always trained to wear a mask in disasters, but this is a disaster you can't really see. And it's very hard for people to understand that protects you wearing a mask, double mask, and it also protects others. Now, I will be getting my second dose of Moderna on Saturday. I will still wear two masks to protect others, even though I will be protected. And St. John's County, wake up, county commissioners. Come on. I agree. They are reckless, endangering people for tourism dollars.
You know, Ruby, when you mentioned the county commission, a commissioner in St. John's actually died, didn't he, from the virus?
I am not 100% County Commissioner Waldron died. I heard he was in rehabilitation.
Okay.
But I
don't want
to
misspeak. I don't want to misspeak. Let me double check that as I have you on the line. Was in critical condition, Paul Waldron.
Yes, he was.
Remarkable that even with that, that the county commission would not call for a mask mandate.
The county commission is about St. John's County growing and expanding and getting tax revenue base. And there's still a bedroom community where people go to your county, Duval County, to work. I'm very active with the county commissioners about how they've started vaccinating the elderly. I mean, that was a joke. I mean, it was a horrible rollout. And granted, it's not going any better yet. I don't mean to put them down. They're trying their best under the circumstances. But it is very difficult to understand opening the amphitheater to 2,500 people. All the bars and restaurants are open. There are people down there recklessly drinking and having a good time. And Daytona Bike Week is happening. They come to St. Augustine. They come to Palm Coast. So it's very concerning, and I hope everyone wears a mask to be safe.
Thank you, Ruby. Yes, and Commissioner Paul Waldron, as I'm double-checking this, he was hospitalized over the summer and did fight off COVID-19. Thank you for the call. Lots of calls from St. John's County, in fact. Jerry calling from St. John's County. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yes, hi, thank you. Yes, I do wear a mask every time I go out. When I go to the doctors, I have always worn two masks, a surgical mask and a cloth mask. When I go to pick up my groceries, I wear the cloth mask and some kind of a filter. I feel that people would be out there spending more money if everybody had a mask on and we all felt safe to go and buy something from a store or go into the grocery store. Doing curbside pickup at the grocery store, the prices are more expensive. So that's another factor. I know that Publix does wear masks, but because the county does not have a mask mandate, you know, people go into the stores without masks on.
Yeah, Jerry. So, and, you know, I hate to cut you off. It's just we're coming up to a break. I know people will cross the county line to go grocery shopping for that very reason.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like our county commissioners really should have done a better job. And when this is over, actually, I'm probably going to move to Jacksonville.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you, Jerry. Jane tweets the show, Paul Waldron's recovery from near death was attributed to prayers from the community. He is now in a wheelchair, she says. Bobby tweets the show, if everyone wore a mask, we wouldn't need to be talking about two masks. I'm irritated with non-maskers and non-believers. The N95 mask is too expensive. I bought my own since I am in healthcare. Peter tweets the show, ask Dr. Goldhagen to tell us how we know we have an authentic KN95 mask. What about that, Jeff?
Well, I would make sure you buy the mask from American manufacturers that is from reputable stores if you can find them actually in stores. But again, you're not going to find the N95 masks generally available, and those do need to be reserved for healthcare workers that are in fact working directly with people who have COVID or are at great risk for COVID.
Okay.
I would take a bit of concern about a statement that was made that we know that. And I understand the context that it was said, that we know that the county commissioners will do everything that they possibly can. This is the most serious public health emergency that we've experienced, certainly in my lifetime, and that's pushing 70 years. Yet we do not have a public health response. We do not have a plan. There is the governor's maybe a great lawyer. And even our mayor, I'm sure, is a great accountant. But in fact, they're not public health experts. And we don't have in our state and in our counties surrounding us, we don't have the public health expertise that is running the response. Opening a few sites where you can get vaccine is not a public health response. That is opening up a few sites. We have in our area, we have over 1 million people that need to be vaccinated. If we're concerned about equity, meaning those people who are at greatest risk actually have access to the vaccine, in particular African-American communities, then it's not good enough only to open up sites in the African-American community, which is the first step that needs to be taken. But we need to actively message and social messaging in order to make sure that people understand the importance of getting the vaccine. So we have a tremendous lack of a public health response and public health expertise. The state has dismantled public health throughout the state. Jacksonville, Duval County has our health department has been dismantled, and so there isn't the expertise available. However, we have medical societies and public health experts that are pleading with the mayor to allow them to be able to participate in building an appropriate response to COVID. And the result of not having that expertise is that we see thousands of people sick, hundreds of people dying, and a situation where, in fact, we don't need to see the death and carnage that is happening around us.
I want to thank you, as always, for not mincing words on this program, and you are known for not doing that anywhere. So listen, everyone, listen to Dr. Goldhagen. Mask up and double mask if you can. If you are interested, order a KN95 mask from an American manufacturer. We still have folks waiting on hold to talk about the N95 mask, and I'm so sorry we can't get all of you on. But Dr. Jeff Goldhagen, it's always great to get your thoughts on this pandemic. Thank you so much for being with us.
Melissa, thank you, and thank your participants.
Much more coming up on the show later. The new head of the Kummer Museum is in place. She'll lay out her vision for that Jacksonville cultural gem. But up next.
We need to have about, a rough number, 80% of the population be vaccinated. And so it's an important collective effort.
Why business leaders across the state are urging everyone to get the COVID vaccine as soon as their turn comes around. We'll speak with the CEO of Florida Blue next. We'll be right back. Business leaders across Florida recently published an op-ed encouraging everyone to get vaccinated for COVID as soon as their turn comes. For more, I spoke with Pat Garrity, CEO of Florida Blue and Guidewell. Hey, Pat, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be with you. Thank you.
So let's talk about the rollout of the vaccination program in Florida. You are speaking out to encourage your employees to get vaccinated. What's happening at Florida Blue Guidewell?
Yes, we are encouraging all of our employees to be vaccinated. And actually, I led an effort that brought more than 150 leaders and CEOs across the state together to put an op-ed piece out endorsing vaccination across the state by the business community leading that effort. So we're trying to encourage in all places. Right now, our workforce is largely remote, but we have made it clear that in order to return to our workplace, people are going to have to be vaccinated. And if they're not vaccinated, they will be working remotely. But we don't want to put any of our employees at risk when we repopulate our campus.
And this is, I guess, you and other CEOs and business leaders are working to counter vaccine skeptics out there. And there's a considerable percentage of the population who is shy or resistant to getting either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine. What's your response to those who have concerns about its safety and its efficacy?
Yeah, it's unfortunate that there are people that are against vaccinations in general, and certainly unfortunate very much here, because this is a place where in order to have what's called herd immunity, meaning enough people that have built a resistance up through vaccination, we need to have about, a rough number, 80% of the population be vaccinated. And so it's an important collective effort that we can all do for each other. I would tell people that these vaccines have been well tested. They've all reached the 95% efficacy, meaning effectiveness levels, and therefore we know they've been tested in a variety of populations for ethnicity and age ranges and all. And so we feel very confident about these vaccines and about their capabilities, and hope that we'll see people as they see their friends and neighbors getting vaccinated and doing well, that there will be a push for more people to get vaccinated.
And Florida Blue is working, I understand, to also make sure vaccines get to underserved communities around the state. Tell us more about those efforts.
Absolutely. So there's a variety of things that are going on. We appreciated the fact that the governor identified seven places of worship around the state. In the Jacksonville area, St. Matthew's Baptist Church on Moncrief Road was designated as a site that can do vaccinations. We also were part of putting a video together for the Martin Luther King breakfast, where we had a number of leaders from around the state talk about the vaccine and talk about their commitment to being vaccinated. We had Pastor Mark Griffin, we had the sheriff, we had Leon Haley, Dr. Kelly Wells, who came out of public health, Kimberly Allen from 90 Forward, and so a number of people from across the community making it clear that they intended to be vaccinated and that they had a lot of support for the vaccine, and numerous doctors involved in that video. And so we will be doing things along that line, making sure the community understands from community leaders how important this effort is and their commitment to being vaccinated themselves.
What are your thoughts about the new Biden administration's commitment to drastically increasing supply? They've set ambitious goals of vaccinating at least 100 million Americans in the first 100 days of their first term. Can that be done? How do you see that working in Florida?
Well, first of all, I am very hopeful that it can be done. They will know better than I about the supply and the ability to fill that supply pipeline. But as somebody who works in health and healthcare, we know the importance of getting our population vaccinated. I would say to you, Melissa, I think the really critical game-changing thing will be Johnson & Johnson's vaccine coming on the market. For those who don't know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is single dose, and it only needs to be stored in refrigeration. So it doesn't need the super cold storage that the current vaccines need, and it doesn't need two doses. We know that they're in about their final phase here of their clinical trials. And so we're very hopeful that if the Johnson & Johnson vaccine tests out at the 95% effectiveness levels that we've seen in the other vaccines, that this is a product that will greatly assist in getting the vaccine out in the marketplace and making it much easier to distribute.
Yeah, one shot, so much more convenient, and let's hope sooner rather than later that is approved for use. Now, let me ask you, final question for you, Pat. Once we're through this pandemic, how do you see the after effects of this ordeal affecting the healthcare industry overall? And will the fallout from all of this further increase momentum toward universal health care, universal health insurance coverage for all Americans or not?
Yeah, it's a great question. And let me parse it out in two ways. One is that I absolutely believe it will move towards universal coverage. But when I say universal coverage, the definition of universal coverage is everybody is covered. The definition isn't that it's done by one entity, and that's the government. And there's lots of great examples for why. And I can just tell you that the British results right now are they have the highest death rate per 100,000 in the world with a national health system. So that seems to be a contradiction in terms, right? But they have not had good results in the British health system. I believe our private system is exactly the way to go, and we are able and capable of innovating better than most people because of that spirit of competition and innovation that's in our system. So right now, we bring folks the ability to see their doctor and have all kinds of visits virtually. And mental health has become a much more virtual activity as well. Those kinds of innovations happen very quickly here while they are more challenging other places. And so I think our system is adopting to the fact that more and more care will happen in your home with great technology supporting it, and it will be more convenient to the customer. And I think the upside of the COVID pandemic is that it pushes people into a crisis mode, which actually helped escalate more innovation and more thinking about how do we treat people more effectively in their homes as opposed to in institutions.
Hmm. Well, fascinating to get those insights, and thank you for your thoughts. He's Pat Garrity, CEO of Florida Blue and GuideWell, based here in Jacksonville. Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, Melissa. I appreciate it.
Well, the Kummer Museum of Art and Gardens has a new leader, and this full title is a mouthful. It's the George W. and Kathleen I. Gibbs Director and Chief Executive Officer. And she is Andrea Barnwell Brownlee on the line now to tell us about what she has in mind at the Kummer Museum. Andrea, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. And it's good to hear your voice. You joined the museum staff in December virtually, relocated to Jacksonville over the holidays, and you've hit the ground running. Tell us a little bit about what drew you to this role and what you have in mind for the Kummer Museum.
You know, the Kummer Museum is an exceptional institution, and what drew me into the role was its ambition. It has an extraordinary history, as you well know, and it aims to be better, as stellar, as exceptional, as incredible as it is. It strives to be better, and I wanted to be a part of that. It has a long history of commitment to its three principal priorities, which, of course, are art, education, and the gardens, but it has a real commitment to being better. That three-part mission is irresistible. And if you spent any time in our gardens or spent any time in our galleries, you can really, really see what I'm sharing. And the board and the staff made it, frankly, as I said, irresistible. They're committed to the city, they're committed to the region, and they're committed to growth and just being better all around. And it was something I simply couldn't resist.
Now, you come to us from Atlanta, roles at Spelman College, and a number of other important positions in the art world. You're an art historian, curator, educator. So you bring a wealth of experience to the Kummer. I was lucky enough to come over there with our children when you put together a full day of programming honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The museum was alive with exhibits and activity in the gardens, and so you really started off with a bang. Tell us a little bit more about what we can expect through the year, particularly hopefully as some of the COVID restrictions later this year might ease up a little bit.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm so glad that you had a chance to experience the Kummer in action recently. One of the most important things right now is our safety. And another thing that really drew me into this institution was its commitment to its visitors and to its audiences to ensure that they are safe. As many of you know, many of the institutions around the country are not yet open, but several institutions in Florida have figured out a way to make visitors safe, adhering to all of the CDC guidelines, as well as the safety protocols. So very, very excited that you had an opportunity to come with your family and experience the museum on the King holiday. You mentioned it was bustling and it was full of life, and it was certainly exciting and dynamic for that to be the first free day that I got to experience in person. Of course, as you know, the Community Foundation has been very, very generous to the museum, and they made it possible for everyone to join us for free on that day. So we're looking forward to many, many opportunities to welcome audiences and to just let everyone know all the great things that Kummer has in store. But you asked what we have coming up. Certainly our permanent collection galleries are always a true delight. We currently have an exhibition entitled Art Ventures, which, if you know, again, about the Community Foundation's long history, you know that Art Ventures is celebrating its 30 years. And what a privilege it is to have several of the award winners of that incredible history. We have a great relationship with the foundation, and it's really, really quite an opportunity to see Jacksonville's own artists on view. And I got to tell you that our visitors have really, really valued and appreciated the opportunity to spend time in those galleries. It doesn't matter if you go before the gardens or after the gardens. Everyone has truly, truly enjoyed spending time and that exhibition. We have a lot of things coming up, a lot of great things up our sleeves in terms of exhibitions and in terms of programs. I always tell people as I meet them and I greet them, and everyone has been so welcoming, stay tuned. There's so much coming up at the Kummer.
Including the PNC Bank Free Fridays beginning this Friday. that's the one that's coming up next. You can come to the museum for free this Friday from 4 to 9 p.m. And throughout the Art Ventures exhibitions run, this Friday, Rebecca Levy and Hurley Winkler will be featured. Mark your calendar for that. And you will be continuing with both in-person and virtual programs. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, again, we want to make sure that everyone, absolutely everyone, is comfortable enjoying all that the museum has to offer, whether it is in person, whether it's virtual. We just want people to know that it is a safe place, it is a safe space, and we are really, really excited about welcoming everyone back just as soon as they're comfortable returning. Absolutely.
And certainly a lot of people might not be comfortable yet, but hopefully that will change. How do you see the role of cultural institutions like the Kummer really serving almost as therapy for people in these times?
You really hit the nail on the head. You really did. You know, art, creativity, and culture are truly balms in this particular time. We've never seen anything like this in our lifetime. And I truly believe that museums are a respite. They're a place of solace. They're a place to value and appreciate beauty. But they're also a place where you can contemplate, to truly, truly contemplate. You know, the Kummer has a great phrase, which also drew me in, which was, come take a moment. We are excited about people coming and lingering longer, especially in these turbulent times when it seems like, you know, a real place to get quiet isn't always possible. So again, it doesn't matter if you're strolling our galleries and spending time, in-person time, with a work of art, or if you're spending time in our gardens just admiring all the majesty and the beauty right on the St. John's River. It is truly, truly a place. So truly, you hit it on the head. Museums are a balm in these very, very turbulent times.
They really are. So kudos to you. I look forward to meeting you at some point. She is Andrea Barnwell Brownlee, the new Chief Executive Officer at the Kummer Museum. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
Some good news for you. And in a moment, some more of that. A look at what's good for you this Wednesday after this.
What makes a story so powerful it can reach through time to become a classic? Novelist George Saunders is the recipient of the Man Booker Prize and many other literary honors, and he joins us to talk about how reading history's great writers taught him the importance of developing his own voice. That's next time on Think. Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
The center of British finance was kind of left out of the post-Brexit trade agreement, which for other financial centers in Europe, maybe not the worst thing.
It is the major international financial center, and the Europeans want a slice of it.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Oh, can they get that slice? We'll have that story for you and the numbers from Wall Street, of course, next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6, here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. California Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna joins us to talk about the party's legislative priorities, what working in a divided Congress might look like, and Donald Trump's upcoming impeachment trial. Also, are some people gaming the system to jump in line for a coronavirus vaccine? That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
There's often a fine line between straight-up comedy and what we think is pure politics. And in the middle of that Venn diagram, you'll find W. Kamau Bell and Hari Kondabolu. We last spoke to them before the election, and all of us have been through a lot since then. I'm Jen White. We'll find out how both are doing next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, a much-loved local nonprofit gets some love and cash from football fans. More shots are going into more arms. A second round of PPP money is on the street. Yeah, despite our many challenges, there is a lot to be thankful for this week. And to that end, we are rounding up some positive news and notes for you in our What's Good Wednesdays. Hey, just 2 days left till Friday. So here is what we like this week. You know, since last March, First Coast Blessings in a Backpack has experienced a tremendous increase in need. They are currently providing weekend meal packs to nearly 5,000 children each week across our region. This amazing nonprofit partners with dozens of schools across the First Coast to identify hungry kids, and they send them home each Friday with a full backpack of food so that they won't go hungry over the weekend. These backpacks blend right in and remove any stigma for the children. So, new CEO Erin Kerr got some news recently that so thrilled her that she had to post a video to thank fans of the Buffalo Bills. Listen to this.
Hello, Bills Mafia. My name is Erin Kerr, and I am the Chief Executive Officer of Blessings in a Backpack. We are so thankful for what you have done over the past week to help feed hungry children in Louisville, Buffalo, Western New York, Maryland, and beyond. You have shown us what true sportsmanship looks like, and it has been an inspiring week for all of us. More than 17,000 people have donated to Blessings in a Backpack since last Saturday night, which totaled over $460,000. We are very excited to cheer the Bills on this weekend against Chiefs Kingdom. Thank you very much for all that you have done, and go Bills!
Now, here's what this is all about. The Bills Mafia, the fan base for the team, helped raise, actually, it's up now to $480,000 from 17,000 different donors, all to honor injured Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson and his favorite charity, Blessings in a Backpack. Now, the funds raised will not help kids on the First Coast, but hundreds of kids here are on a waiting list for weekend meals. And Blessings in a Backpack says it only takes $120 to feed a local child for an entire school year. They're hoping all this football publicity will help them get the word out and feed more kids right here in our hometown. Just go to their website, Blessings in a Backpack, search Blessings in a Backpack First Coast, and give what you can. Now, speaking of our local schools, Generation Wow presented a virtual program for students this week. High school girls from across the First Coast got to take part in two power-packed hours, focusing on building their self-esteem and their leadership skills. They also heard from a range of dynamic female leaders who zoomed in from across America. Generation Wow, which is part of Generation W, is also launching a new mentor program called Connect with Wow that allows girls to connect with a dynamic mentor uniquely matched to them. To founder Donna Orender, we say keep wowing us. And we are pretty stoked to report that our regular WJCT contributor and board member Charles Griggs has the bragging rights. He won the coveted Golden Typewriter Award at Monday's media golf competition at TPC Sawgrass. A lot of local journalists were on hand to get an update on this year's Players Championship from executive director Jared Rice. And while they were there, they took part in a little fun on the links. So congratulations, Charles Griggs, for doing us proud. And when it comes to winning, we want to thank Folio Weekly and all of Folio's readers for choosing us here at First Coast Connect as one of the Best of Jack's 2020 winners. That award means so much to everybody here, myself, producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, along with our news director, Jessica Palumbo, and everybody here. The recognition means everything in the world to us. We really appreciate it, and we're so excited to see that attorney John Phillips has found a way to keep Folio Weekly going strong in this community, despite a challenging climate for media, print media in particular. So thanks, Folio. It means a lot to us here at WJCT. Now, if you have some good news you'd like us to add to our weekly menu, just send it to us. Drop us an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Every Wednesday at the close of the show, we highlight positive news in this time of pandemic and recession. We all need a little bit of that, don't we? We also send out a weekly What's Good Wednesdays e-newsletter. That's going out today, and you can subscribe right on our website and share the good news with a friend, too. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is actually on maternity leave. Congratulations, Jessica, on the birth of your second. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. As I said, keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Our podcast is up later today wherever you listen, and you can always catch the show through our WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Remember, keep masking up, everybody.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.